That shirt you have on, how many times have you worn it? We're taking a deep dive into fashion sustainability today. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig, in for Anu Anand. Good morning. First, though, to Hong Kong. Police are using tear gas and pepper spray against protesters hurling bricks and other objects as they try to storm Parliament. That's amid growing anger at a controversial extradition bill that would make it easier to send people to mainland China for trial if they're accused of crimes there. Critics fear alleged torture and detention tactics in the Chinese judicial system. The growing unease, which started peacefully, has investors on edge. The BBC's Lisa Santarelli has more.
More than 100 businesses shut down to allow a staff to protest today, and nearly 4,000 teachers have vowed to strike. A number of financial companies, including the banking giant HSBC, have also made flexible working arrangements for their employees. We've also seen market reaction, with shares in Hong Kong dropping as much as 2% as the protests turned violent. Demand for cash also rose, with short-term interest rates moving higher. Many of the territory's top bankers and business people thought they may be able to question Carrie Lam, who is the territory's chief executive, in person about the new law, as she was due to be the guest of honour at the Stock Exchange's exclusive birthday cocktail party today. But as it turns out, Ms. Lam pulled out a few hours before it was due to start. I'm the BBC's Lisa Santarelli for Marketplace.
Despite those protests, the government is still pushing for that extradition bill, which is expected to pass a final vote on June 20th. Let's do the numbers. Hong Kong's Hang Seng was Asia's worst performer today. Also weighing on sentiment was Chinese consumer inflation that hit a 15-month high. European shares are also lower, with oil prices on track for their fourth straight weekly decline. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe is embarking on a two-day visit to Iran, marking 90 years of diplomatic ties between the two countries. But it's also seen as a mission to warm relations between the U.S. and Iran. Craig Earlham is a senior market analyst at Oranda.
The gap between what the U.S. wants and what Iran wants is just far too severe. And the idea that this gap can be closed, even over the course of a number of meetings, feels quite slim. While Shinzo Abe may be seen as a good person to be acting as the middleman, I'm just not sure that he's necessarily going to have the sway in order to influence them. He obviously is seen as being much closer to the US.
What does Japan have to gain then from warmer relations between the two other countries? How strong are the trade links between Iran and Tokyo?
From a trade perspective, Japan is a buyer of Iranian oil, so these sanctions mean that they're having to seek oil from elsewhere.
And there's a huge potential benefit for Iran as well, right? Iran has seen its economy plunge into a recession, and as you point out, it could see its crude exports have after the U.S. removed waivers for countries like India that wanted to import Iranian oil.
Absolutely. This is going to have a severe impact on the Iranian economy. The U.S. wants to put as much pressure on the Iranian regime in order to invoke a regime change. The question is it going to have enough of an impact in order to bring them to the table, or is it going to result in the actual break off the entire agreement altogether with the EU, with China, Russia, and force the regime to undertake actions in order to retaliate against the US, which involves its nuclear program again?
Craig Earlham speaking to me there. Fast fashion doesn't have to be bad for the environment. Spanish retail group Inditex, the owner of Zara, has become one of the largest sellers of organic cotton garments. Today, the company reported a 10% pop in profit and record sales in the first quarter. So are other retailers catching on to demand for more sustainable clothing? The BBC's Susanna Streeter went to find out.
I'm in the middle of Oxford Street, the heart of London's retail district. Every minute, $13,000 is spent. The big retailers want that footfall, but many also realise that to do so, they have to start adopting practices which are more sustainable.
In H&M shops, there's now more in-store recycling to reduce the amount of clothing going to landfill. And amongst the racks, there's now more clothing which has been manufactured to limit damage to the environment.
Well, I've just come into Heartfelt Vintage, which is a boutique in Bristol. With me now is the co-owner of the shop, Kate Ashwell. Kate, tell me about the dress you're wearing. It certainly doesn't look new.
No, it's definitely not. So I'm wearing a 1930s dress today. Clothes were just made better back in the day. Often they were handmade, just the quality of the cottons and silks and all those sorts of things. You don't find that quality today.
The thing is, people will say, but what I find in vintage stores, it's beautiful, but it's not really on trend.
That's totally not true. Every season, there's always something in my shop that is absolutely bang on trend. Designers, high street shops, they are all looking back to what has come before for inspiration for what they're designing.
So what happens to all the other clothes that aren't resold? Well, in Britain, 300,000 tons of clothing every year still ends up in the bin. Keith James from the sustainability charity RAP told me in the UK at least, huge steps have been taken to reduce the amount of items going to landfill.
We know that 6% of the population in the UK are responsible for 18% of the clothes shopping. If we can work with that 6%, then we can make a real difference to the amount of clothing that's used and discarded. So just making sure people think about their clothing at every opportunity. For example, Urban Outfitters in the US have launched a rental service. They'll send people new clothing, and then at the end of that month, you send them back and they go on to someone else as well.
Well, I'm back home now and going through my wardrobe. It is a combination of designer, vintage and charity shop finds. Some are more than 20 years old, but it's true that I do have quite a few items I love but rarely wear. So from now on, anything I do buy should not only be sustainable, I hope, but should also become the other half of the lonely, unused items already hanging up here.
That's the BBC's Susanna Streeter reporting there. Finally, Penny, for your thoughts, how about $44,000 for your hair? That's how much a lock of Beethoven's mane sold at auction in London this week. No, I didn't bid, and it was more than double the highest estimate. If you missed us live, catch us on our podcast wherever you get yours. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.